Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Lucas and Crawford on B-Ball Show. And I am Greg Crawford. Richard Lucas takes the kind of the start of fall and all summer off. He's kind of a wimp. But it gives me a chance to talk to some great people. And by the way, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do it at WC Hoops. That's only one C, WC Hoops, just like it sounds, or at www.gregorycrawfordsports.wordpress.com, where I write about a lot of things focusing on basketball, golf, sports, business, and power rankings, of which the Willamette, and I always write in nines out of great respect for the game of golf. And last year, I had the Willamette Bearcats. I combined the Northwest Conference, Cascade Collegiate Conference. They were in those power rankings quite a bit. And this is one of my favorite guests to interview on the radio. I really enjoy him. He's the head men's coach at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, Kip Ione. And Kip is with us again tonight, and I like that. Kip, how you doing?
Yeah, good to hear. Good to hear from you, Greg. Always. Oh, I'm excited. I like hearing about power rankings. That means the season's getting closer. That's great.
Yeah, the season is getting close, and I don't do them for any other reason except for entertainment purposes only. But boy, do they! What is it, Kip, about rankings that stir the emotions so much of people?
You know, I think it has to, you know, all of us, especially in the early part when you see rankings, all of us, you know, are coming off a long off season, no matter the school you're at, the program you're representing, we've all put in a ton of work, the players especially on their end. So I think sometimes they can take it as a lack of validation of what they did or a validation of what they did, what people expect of them. But, you know, a lot of times as coaches, you know, we take those things. I always say rank us first or rank us last. We can motivate off those. Anywhere in between is kind of hard. So you feel free. Pick us first or pick us last, and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I like that. I like that very much. That's a very good way of putting it. I'm chuckling pretty hard if you could see me here, Kip. Kip, for people that maybe don't know you, and we're always picking up new listeners, and the Bearcat Nation comes through big time when you're on here, and way beyond the Bearcat Nation, a lot of basketball fans. Tell them a little bit about your history at Willamette University, which is located in the capital of the state of Oregon, beautiful Salem, Oregon, and a beautiful campus and a lot to offer.
Absolutely. We're right across the street from the Capitol. So if you're coming down to see the golden man on the statue on top, well, you'll see the Bearcats right across the street. But I'm a Bearcat lifer. I tell recruits and their families and alumni and everybody when we're talking about myself and the connection with Willamette. I was recruited from Billings, Montana to Willamette. I came in 1997 and played basketball for Coach Gordy James, obviously a Hall of Fame coach. 300-plus wins, a 93 national championship team. I was lucky enough to play for Coach, and then also got my master's degree from Willamette in teaching. That was my first year as an assistant for Gordy in 2001 and 2002. And I was on his staff for 8 years, and then when he was he retired and went off to every cruise known to man, I think he's been on. I was lucky enough to get the head job when he left, and I got the torch passed to me and make it my job to uphold, you know, the tradition and the legacy of Bearcat Hoops. So met my wife there, Kelly. You know, we've got three beautiful kids here in Salem. So, you know, we're Willamette Cardinal and Gold through and through, and here we are, and it's another season, and away we go.
And, Kip, is your wife have a profession? Is she working? I know three kids
is
a profession.
Yeah. Oh, it's tough. It is. I tell you what, man. It's people talk about organizing practice. We've got to organize our life with those three running around. But it keeps us busy. But yeah, she's a full-time high school business teacher at North Marion High School. Was a long-time head volleyball coach. But, you know, with my schedule and the way the kids are growing and their schedules are expanding day to day with flag football, gymnastics, and all the other things. So I'm lucky enough that she doesn't coach anymore and really runs the household for us when she gets done with work. So it keeps us busy. Our lives are run by Google Calendar, and we better be checking it or we're going to miss something.
Very good. I great updating us on your role with Willamette and your wife and your family, and I love all that stuff. You know, Kip, you're going to be able to kind of officially start practice on October 15th. I'm sure you'd like a little bit more time, but what do you want to accomplish in that first week of practice? It's a short turnaround before you play your first game.
Absolutely. No, that's a great question. And it's something that we've definitely evolved our process. You know, if it's on a weekend, if it's a Friday night, Saturday night, you know, we'll always do a Midnight Madness show for the campus and really have some fun with it and bring kids out. This year it's on a Thursday, so we're just going to show up at midnight because I can't wait. I can tell the guys, I know you want to sleep, but I can't wait any longer. So we're going to show up and just have a practice at midnight on the 15th. But really, what we try to do our first 3 days is put in the cornerstones, just the basics of our system offensively and defensively, and then we play a ton. We scrimmage a ton the first 3 days because we like to call that our sorting week. You know, in our program, we've got 23 guys. So we've got a varsity team and a JV team. And trying to establish roles, at least for the first 3 to 4 weeks, is much easier after we go through a really intense competition period. We stat everything, film everything, and then we have a metric we use. It kind of helps us determine, you know, position by position after those 3 days and all the work you put in the off season and some of the other things we do off the floor, we're going to know kind of a depth chart after 3 days and go with that for the first month. So it'll help us establish jobs and roles and practice for that first month. And after that month, obviously guys can earn their way out of a job they want. You know, if they want to improve their standing and get more minutes, there's plenty of avenues to do that. If they get comfortable in their job and don't put in the effort and get beat out by somebody else, there's another avenue down. So but those first 3 days for us are really, really important. It's a little bit of pressure, and I think it's good. You know, you got to go to where the pressure lives in basketball, and that's if you can make that day-to-day in your practice, I think you're really preparing your guys for when the lights go on and the scoreboard's on. So we don't waste time. We get right to it that first day.
Kip, I think our listeners would be interested to know. They love hearing what you have to say by the comments that I get, and I think that's why I have you on. You're interesting and you're entertaining. That's what radio should be. And you're great information.
You're a great assist giver.
Thank you for that. I was going to ask you, following practice as a norm, do you go in with the team together? Does everybody kind of go their way and eat some dinner and go to studying? Mm-hmm. And what is your coaching staff? Do you leave it to the next day to kind of get together? How do you handle that part?
That's a great question. You know, a lot of that, once again, has just been an evolution of my own beliefs, and I got to thank some of my previous assistants. I've been lucky enough to have some great guys. I think, you know Michael Plank that's at Portland State now was a longtime assistant for me. J.J. Davis did a great job for me. And most recently, before I got Jonathan Willis with me and Kevin McCray, I had Patrick Adelman, Rick Adelman's youngest. And one of the things we really talked about is let's not watch the film until the morning, no matter how great we feel about it, no matter how bad we feel about it. And sometimes it can be a bad feeling, whether it's a practice or a game. I don't want to watch it and try to analyze and break down off raw emotion. And I think you can do that sometimes where you're really furious and you're convinced as a coach that, oh my God, our screen roll defense was horrible. Well, if you 10 minutes after the practice is over or the game's over, you go watch the film, that's all you're going to see. It's going to be kind of a confirmation bias, and you're only going to see what you want to see. If you sleep on it, no matter how hard that is, and sometimes it's very hard, if you sleep on it and get up early on, sometimes that's 4 a.m. because you can't do it and you can't wait any longer, but then you have a better chance of really viewing it for what really happened. And sometimes you are right in your gut feeling, but a lot of times you'll notice it was never as bad or never as good as you thought it was. So I thank Pat a lot for that. Because that was really one of the things he stressed and got me to really buy into the season he was with me.
And, of course, his dad, you know, one of the tremendous coaches, totally underrated.
Absolutely.
A fabulous coach and deserves to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame. You know, let me ask you this, Kip. I was interviewing a coach a couple nights ago. I'll let him remain nameless, but you can listen to the podcast. You'll know who it is. Now, we've never had a bad practice, and I didn't want to retort because we didn't have enough time, but I kind of wanted to say, well, in other words, then you never would say anything to a referee because nobody's ever made a bad call. Of course you're going to have a bad practice. Of course a referee's going to miss a call. How do you overcome bad practices?
No, I think you're right. You know, we'd love to know. I think we always have good intentions in practice. I think probably every day you go into it with a great feel for it. But, you know, I think that's one of the things that we're trying to really stress to our guys, especially with the amount of returning talent we have and some of the success we enjoyed last year, is great practices aren't, you know, they're not guaranteed. They're not given. And motivation isn't given. You know, we're not guaranteed every day we wake up and go to work or wake up at 5 in the morning with your youngest or as a coach go to. You're not guaranteed to really have the juice, as my assistant, Coach Willis, like, who's got the juice today? Sometimes it's not you. And finding a way to drive through that anyway, finding a way to finish a practice, even though it hasn't gone as well as the coach would like or the energy hasn't been, if you can find a way to finish it, I think you're really preparing your team for the real grind of the season, because there's no way every game you go out and play you're going to have the same amount of excitement for. We're all competitors, and you have that baseline level of juice. But you know, when we play Linfield, you know, no offense to our illustrious host here, you know, when we play Linfield, we're a little more excited about maybe a non-conference game against somebody from Colorado. But we got to go out and play anyway. And it's not an excuse to say I wasn't motivated. And I don't think it's realistic to say you're going to be super juiced every game. But if you can have the discipline to finish anyway, I think you're on your way to being a pretty good team.
Kip, a couple of my – I'm so fortunate to have probably 95% of my friends come from the sports world naturally, and probably 90% of those are from the golf, but a lot of them are from basketball. And a couple of those people are Coach Keating at Santa Clara and Coach Barnes at Cal State Bakersfield, who do a great job year in and year out. They don't get a lot of notoriety. But they both kind of like what I have to say here, and I'd like to see your comments. Is the most important position on the floor in basketball these days the point guard, or is it, as those two coaches like what I have to say, your best player?
Great question. God, it'd be nice if those happen to be the same human being. I think the most important position out there is the decision maker that leads your team. And that doesn't always have to be the point guard. Often it is, especially if it's a ball-centric offense that really they're going to command the ball and handle it a lot. I think the rule change, taking away the closely guarded five-second call, is really going to put a huge premium on point guards. I know for our system this year, there's a lot more freedom for in time. It sounds weird because the shot clock's shorter, but because they can just kind of yo-yo at the top and not have to worry about getting off it in that five-second amount, if you've got a great handler, he can really dictate a game, even more so now. In the past, you know, we've had small forwards or posts or fours that we really ran the offense through, and if they were a great decision maker, it really made me look pretty smart. You know, no matter what you draw or how you scheme, it always comes down to the kids making those reads and making those split-second decisions. And if the person that has the ball the most in your stuff is a great decision maker, once again, like I said, you got a chance to be pretty good. If there's a high propensity to risk and turnover from that decision maker, you're going to go great quickly that season. So, you know, I think I agree with you on the best player, but I hope that best player makes really good decisions. And that might just be they're going to shoot it a lot because that's the best choice for us, but I think that they got to know what the plan is and make sound choices.
Kip, without giving away the trade secrets, is this going to change your philosophy at all? I've been lobbying for this rule change, which finally happened, and it's one of the most. It was one of the most stupid rules in basketball that in the backcourt you could call timeout with 9 seconds, 1 second left, 9 seconds exhausted. Are you going to pressure a little bit more in the backcourt because of the change now where you don't get a new count if you're in trouble?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, for us, you know, the way we've played defense, especially the last 2 years, we've been pretty good at. We finished second behind Whitman, who's a phenomenal pressing team. Coach Bridgman does an amazing job. We finished second behind them in turnovers forced, even though we don't extend that far. I'm not sure it's going to change our defensive philosophy, but I'll tell you what, it does absolutely make us very aware of how good our press break is going to have to be. You know, obviously it's had to be that way just for Whitman, but in general, you don't get a second chance. You can't bail your guys out. You know, without coaches even taking live ball timeouts, we can't do that anymore this year. So that's another added layer to we better know what the heck we're doing if we get picked up, because that margin of error has really shrunk.
I've asked you this before, but I think it's such a key point. To me, as a fan of the Northwest Conference, one of the real highlights was the limited amount of timeouts. I love the flow. Mm-hmm. Now you've gone to the Division One deal of timeout under 16,
yeah.
under 12, under 8, under
yeah.
4. I just don't like that. Is that going to change your coaching at all? Or, you know, I'll never forget
you know,
that.
I think
Brad Barbarick saying that when he played Portland State, he ran out of things to say.
He's not. I'm telling you, I completely agree. We go to Boise State this year. You know, in the past when we've played Portland State, we've played the Ducks. You know, those that is that 75 seconds, boy, it is forever. I don't know how they do it. I'm not sure how you can be tired at the upper levels because they're so long breaks of play. You know, I have mixed feelings about it as well. I understand. The unification and trying to make sure our representative is well prepared for NCAA tournament play, non-conference play, where a lot of leagues have gone to that. I think it'll be very imperative on my staff to make sure I know when those are coming. We have one less timeout than usual that we can do, you know, as far as the fulls and the 30s and one less carries over. So it'll be important for Coach Mack, whose job it is on my staff, to make sure I know where I'm at with my timeouts, to make sure I'm not wasting them if we don't need to and there's a media coming up.
Kip, you talked about Hall of Fame Coach James. I'm going to break a little news here. I broke it earlier. I do the Tyler Gevings show 9:30 to 10, and then
mm-hmm.
I follow it up with this show. But I broke it on Tyler's show because – we always are breaking news on that program for some reason. But I've never been happy totally, Kip, with the Oregon Sports Hall of Fame. I'm not the type of guy that throws people under the bus. I'm just the type of guy that likes to do things. So starting next week, I'm starting my Oregon Basketball Hall of Fame. And,
oh, wow.
Of course, Coach James will be in there eventually. But my
mm-hmm.
first three inductees are going to be Coach Miles, Coach
okay,
Wagner,
absolutely.
Clackamas, and Terry
uh-huh.
Durham, you know, the longtime NBA referee who's done so much to promote officiating
gotcha. Yep.
after his career ended. So I'll probably add somebody about every month. So I'm going to talk about those three to begin with, then I'll
that's
add
great.
Somebody
yeah.
every month. And I think it'll be kind of fun.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. One of the things, I just went to George Raveling's Coaching for Success Academy in L.A. this last weekend, and one of the themes from that was knowing the greats from before us on the coaching side. You know, I think a lot of people would know a Phil Jackson or a lot of those, but there's a lot of coaches from, like you mentioned earlier, D2, NAIA, high school, that have really done a lot for basketball, and I think it's important for young coaches like myself to make sure we're paying our respects to what they did and learning from them and then hopefully passing on something to the next group. You know, one of the things Buzz Williams from Virginia Tech said at the clinic was, how are there only 110 people at this thing when it's put on by a Hall of Fame coach? There's three Hall of Fame speakers and two NBA speakers. You know, so I think it's important for all of us. I think it's a great idea that what you're doing to learn the history of the game and not find ourselves being trapped into being know-it-alls. To make sure we're always trying to strive to be learn-it-alls.
Very well said, and thank you. And I was going. It's funny that you brought that up, that you went there. I was going to ask you a question about that because I was the great basketball writer from New York, Dick Wise. I follow him. He often retweets my
mm-hmm.
stuff, and I really appreciate that. But he was tweeting out about the clinic, and one thing he
mm-hmm.
said, and you can maybe expound on this, is Coach Raveling says, it said in that clinic, if you're going to be a successful head basketball coach on any level, you got to be an expert in one thing. And, of course, he's written three books on rebounding. What are your thoughts
uh-huh.
on that, what he said there?
I think it was a great point. You know, and I actually heard Coach Raveling a little bit of that similar speech he gave this past weekend. He gave at the Final Four on the campus of Butler. And it really resonated with me, not just for myself, and, you know, and trying to develop what would be my area of expertise that I felt I had a great background in and a chance to do some more research in, but also for my assistants, guys that are trying to move up in the world and guys that are trying to find their own path to being a head coach. It was a great tool for me to say, hey, look at what this guy, you know, this is one of the great connectors of the game, one of the best relationship guys in the game. He's telling you to go find something that you can really wrap yourself around. So it was fun for me to kind of give that assignment to my staff, you know, my young guys and young coaches I know across the country that are friends of mine, maybe played for me, worked for me, and share that message. And I think it's a great way, and it's a different path than I think some people maybe outside of coaching or maybe even young people in coaching think you need to take to get to the, you know, the loftier levels of our profession, where it's, hey, who do I need to know and how can I use them? Well, how about you go make yourself an expert and make yourself invaluable? Once you do that, then you can worry about how that, where you take that information. But let's go learn a little bit more about the game, rather than, you know, let's take this player to this place, or let me go wine and dine this guy at this conference. I really appreciated what Coach Raff said about that.
Kip, you can comment on this or you can pass. We had some big basketball news this past week. Coach Larry Brown, no doubt, is a Hall of Fame coach and wins wherever he goes and knows the game.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if this holds true, this will be the third school he's been at that's gone on probation that he's coached at. And mm-hmm. I always got to think that, you know, somebody that's coaching Division III and the most important thing is to producing people that are going to go out in the community and become lawyers, presidents of banks, you name it, and get their
mm-hmm.
grades done. And then somebody that wins a lot and collects a big paycheck and gets a team on probation.
It's one of those things. Obviously, Coach Brown is a legend in our game. You know, I was lucky enough. I spent a couple clinics here locally with his brother, Herb Brown, who oozes basketball knowledge. So I think it's a great self-reflection moment whenever there's something, whether it's Coach Brown or anybody in the game gets caught up in anything that, you know, whatever happened. I think you got to make sure you're always maintaining a level of balance in your own brain. You know, am I doing this for the right reasons? Am I chasing W's or am I chasing people? And I know how much I hate to lose, and I know how much we like to win, but hopefully we can keep a perspective, no matter who we are, and no matter what's on the line, that we're really in this business for the players and for what they need and what they need, and show them the right way to go about being a man. And I know it can be tough, you know, and I can't imagine the pressures faced at levels above mine, because I know how much I put on myself at this one, much less outside influences that maybe we don't have to deal with at D3, that as the farther up the food chain you go, you probably do.
Kip, expound a little bit, too, on that, what you mentioned about, by the way, I got all the old-time punks from Linfield listening tonight, several of them, and then, of course, the young punks won't listen because they're idiots, because they think I shouldn't interview a Willamette coach, which is,
gotcha.
You know, that goes to the bottom of the barrel with me. Enough said there. But
mm-hmm.
What about that relationship and that rivalry with Linfield?
You know, I think I was able to go to Willamette and be there in a time when it was still hot and heavy. So it's always resonated with me, and I really enjoy rivalry. You know, I'm from Billings, Montana, and their high school rivalries, Cat Grizz, Montana State, Montana, there's no pro teams. So those rivalries really stick to this day. You know, a Billings West person and me from Billings Skyview, that's not a good mix. But I think that's healthy, you know, and I've always liked the Willamette-Linfield rivalry. I think both schools now have a great respect for each other. I think the football game still brings out a lot of the heat. It was nice to see us get a win, because it can't really be a rivalry unless you mix in a win once in a while against the other one. It's been a long time since we were able to do that. But, you know, I try to instill in our guys the history of it and the great times the Wildcats and the Bearcats have had playing against each other and really, really wanting to beat each other. But I definitely think there's a healthy respect there. Obviously, Coach Rosenberg, I think the world of him. He does a great job. He'll get that thing turned around, and it'll make my life more difficult. Coach Doty's a mentor of mine, a guy that I lean on still to this day for ideas and bringing in to talk at clinics I have for young coaches. And so I think it's a healthy one. I don't think there's any need for over the top crazy resentment, but I think it's a healthy rivalry and a healthy relationship where, man, that's somebody that color really makes me want to be good and make sure we stay on top of them.
Kip, speaking of rivalries, and I want to mention that we're going to have you on 2 weeks from tonight again, and we'll break down the Bearcat roster on that night. How
about
that sound?
Love it.
Okay,
always,
great.
I always like talking about my guys, yeah.
Yeah, I know you do, and I think that's important, and I think it's important that we draw so many Willamette fans listening to this program. But I was going to ask you, speaking of rivalries, this has always bothered me even when I officiated. I do not like the post-game handshake on the floor. And I know I'm in the minority. I like it before the game, but I think it's an accident waiting to happen, and it has happened.
Well, I've definitely been involved in even situations where coaches were very, very animated going through that line. You know, I think it's one of the things that I've worried about at our place, at Cone Fieldhouse and Gordy James Court, is in the past, both teams have exited out the arena, whether it's at halftime or at the end of the game, out of the same single door. And our path to our team room and the path to the visitors' room was literally on top of each other. And I've talked a long time, and I've talked to Val Cleary, our new AD, about we've got to find a way to send the visitors out the right side door and out us out the left. And if for nothing else, for that exact same reason you're saying, it's a powder keg that one of these crazy games that means a ton and it goes one team's way and the other team isn't, and we all go out and bump shoulders through one doorway, then that could be a ruckus waiting to happen. So in that regard, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, Kip, have a great couple weeks. I'll see you in person pretty soon, I'm sure, out in the recruiting trail. But I look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks, 10 o'clock, on the Lucas and Crawford B-Ball Show, where you will break down your roster as well. We'll get some other great information from you as we do every week.
I appreciate it, Greg. Thanks for having me, as always.
You betcha. And Bearcat Nation, spread the word on this program. Tweet it out. Tweet the link out in case people missed it tonight. We appreciate that. And that goes for all you basketball fans. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back again next Wednesday night, 10 o'clock. Lucas and Crawford on B-Ball Show. And in 2 weeks, Skip Iono will join us again, the head men's coach at Willamette University, member of the Northwest Conference, and located in beautiful Salem, Oregon. Good night, everyone, and don't forget to make your free throws.